Hello?
Okay. I'm back.
Okay, good. I just want to let you know I'm back. So, okay. So, should I wait another minute?
I guess you could. Maybe, Kathy, do you want to take roll call to see who's on?
Sure. Okay, let's make sure everybody's back. Jay?
Here.
Mike Kirshner?
Yes, I'm here.
Kelly?
Yes here.
Dele?
Yes, here.
Julie Shannon? Hey, Roger?
I'm here.
Mike Wilson?
Present.
Scott Matthews?
I'm here.
Okay, so we're just missing Dr. Shannon.
Okay. Why don't we wait for about 30 seconds and see what happens. And you know what? I'm just going to do a little jabbering while we wait for Julie to get in, perhaps. So I want to just take a look at the time. So we have got to look at my agenda. We have until noon, and I'm going to. So that's it's about five after. It's about 55 minutes. I want to make sure. I would like to pause in our discussion at 10 of noon and really talk about final steps in preparation for the May 5th and 6th meeting. So that means that 45 minutes of discussion. And what I'd like to do in this 45 minutes is I'm not going to go around the table, so to speak. I think we've already done that, and I want to thank everybody for their incredible, thoughtful responses. I would like to, Odette, offer you or Colleen or anyone else that, or just invite you and encourage you at this point to jump in when you want somebody to get more specific or you need some clarification on advice.
Okay.
And what we'll do now is just simply I'll do the cue kind of thing. We're starting with Scott because I've asked him to start, and we're really going to go in now to recommendations to DTSC on once we've got our binning or our prioritization factors, how do we deal with multiple factors, and do we have a nice weighting scheme that's numeric? Do we have thresholds above which or below which things fall out? How would we recommend that they deal with that in order to get ultimately to those product categories that are going to have to go through an alternatives assessment and perhaps get regulated at the end? So, Scott, why don't you start us off with your thoughts?
Sure. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I apologize in advance that it's spring break here, and I'm at home, and I have two sons playing hockey around the house. So I've been muting and unmuting very quickly as I've been going around refereeing that game.
As long as they're not breaking furniture, you're probably fine, right?
No furniture, but we won't go there. Anyway, so I apologize for the what must be lots of clicks and unclicks as I'm doing this. Anyway. So, as I said before, most of my sort of expertise isn't specifically in the area of exposure, and I know there's plenty of people on the committee who are good in those areas. So I've been thinking about trying to think about how to prioritize on the sort of this quote-unquote volume side. And again, as I said earlier, I think that's an interesting word just because in the draft I saw it's kind of vague what volume meant, whether it was volume of product in terms of some physical unit of, you know, liters, or whether that was sales. And I don't know that that matters, but the fact that it's vague allows us to think about it a couple different ways. but the thing I was thinking about as I started to hint at earlier was I was trying to work from sort of the consumer side and thinking of consumption of products or chemicals and trying to think about things that were either used frequently, and of course frequency of use is going to go up to multiple times daily, back to, you know, very infrequently once a year kind of things. But I also started thinking about, and so there's obviously the numbers that sort of go along with those of, you know, multiple daily down to none, and if you're thinking on a sort of equivalent daily use, you're at, you know, three versus one 365th of a day. So, you know, several orders of magnitude different there. the other thing I was thinking about, as I said, with respect to the word volume was, I was poking around trying to figure out what reasonable numbers might be for sort of thresholds for volumes. And I started thinking about, you know, how much, I started looking for data on how much cleaning products are actually manufactured in California each year. And in the sort of, you know, cleaning products kind of, you know, niche that we've been talking a lot about, that's $4 billion a year. That's only what's manufactured. I assume what's purchased is many times that, so it might be $10 billion a year. And if we go to, you know, some initial thoughts on how to sort of parcel that out, you know, 1% of that market would be $40 million, which is already a huge number. And, you know, maybe, as I said, maybe that's low and it's really $100 million is 1% of something. But even that idea of 1%, sort of as a fractional way of trying to look for things of some threshold of something being greater than that amount or the amount of some particular chemical or product sold being above that seems really, really high. So, you know, I sort of backed off from the idea of percentages to thinking about, was there equivalent household expenditure, right? So, you know, consumers buying X dollars worth of it because that at least perhaps wouldn't have the same sort of reaction by either advocates or consumers of, boy, you're only looking for really high dollar volume things, and that's why I'm sort of reacting to the idea of the volume being vague. But I'm really concerned about, you know, the sort of the perceptions of people and the reactions if it seems like this is a limited only to an economic screening. So I say that because it seems like that might be an almost non-starter if we try to do it that way based on those percentages. And so I back off again to say that I think probably a, you know, physical volume is probably the way to go. And again, I don't know the exposure side well enough to suggest, but I think we have to go back to the idea of, you know, units per day or equivalent units per day used. And I don't know what the right unit is in terms of, you know, sort of the equivalent of liters to milliliters. But that might be the useful way of doing it, and something that consumers at least, or people who are going to sort of see and hear about the regulations might better understand, because I don't think a sort of volume, a dollar sales volume basis would fly very well because of the big numbers. I'll just say one last thought, and I'll save some others for later. But I think that, again, as I sort of asked first when I was asking about criteria, if the goal is sort of narrowing and using not just these sort of artificial bins, but to have sort of quantitative ways of separating it, that I think the order of magnitude, as I said earlier, might be the biggest victory to be able to figure out as we're looking for these differences. As I said, that depending on sort of frequency of use as a way of thinking about it, you have a way of sort of having order of magnitude differences. And if what we're really trying to do is to get through this sort of narrowing to really get to things, that to the extent that we can find these sort of filtering criteria that have order of magnitude differences, I think that's going to really help us. I've sort of talked about one in terms of these volumes. I know tangentially some of the exposure issues, and I know that there's multiple order of magnitude differences for many of the chemicals we're talking about. But that's sort of my main thought, is that we can sort of really leverage those ideas of order of magnitude differences to help us walk people through what the sort of high-level process in 2A might be by trying to put numbers in 2B. Sorry, I'm gonna press it back on mute.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Scott. I'm not sure if anybody would anybody like to respond to what they heard from Scott, or have other ideas about using quantitative methodologies for prioritization or weighting thresholds?
This is Odette. I would at some point, maybe, you know, Scott can provide a little bit more detail about how he would see us using order of magnitude differences. I get the concept, but I'm not quite sure how to implement it.
Okay. And I'm not sure if Scott put it on mute because he was...
I know.
So, Scott, if you...
I'm still here. Do you want me to talk about that now or offline, Odette?
Why don't you, for all of us, if you can give a little more detail on that, I think it would help all of us, too.
Okay, so just to repeat what I said and why I was sort of saying it that way, sorry if it wasn't obvious, but when I was thinking, one of the ones that I mentioned that was sort of connected to our discussion in 2A, as well as things that were discussed previously, were the idea of frequent use or frequency of use. And if we were coming up with a metric that could perhaps feed into a weighting system or a multi-criteria system, if we were talking about chemicals that were used daily and, you know, toothpaste, which we're going to use multiple times a day, versus, I don't know, carpet cleaner, which for some people who don't have young kids, they might only use once a year, that frequency of use scale would be, if we were, again, talking about equivalent daily uses, which I'm making up a number for, it's going to range from 3 a day down to, you know, 1 day per year. And that's going to have that's going to have an order of magnitude difference in terms of frequency of use.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry that wasn't clear the first time.
I'm
half distracted by what's going on in the basement.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. Okay. Mike Wilson?
Well, yeah, just a caveat to that. One of the things that's interesting in the U.S. EPA has a consumer product sales database, percentage of sales that go to the consumer market and versus those that are used professionally. And so some of the products that we think of as consumer products, 90% of the sales actually go to professional uses. And so I guess Scott, I would ask if there's a, you know, how you improve the resolution so that you actually identify highly exposed subpopulations in your model of looking at frequency of use per day, if that would be something that you know would be a way of prioritizing, and how you might do that.
Yeah, no, I mean, Michael, I was thinking the same thing before, and why I had the question, which I was really glad you responded to, is that that's why I was curious, literally, whether there were databases of these ideas of frequency of use. That I'm somewhat comfortable, I don't want to say comfortable, somewhat familiar with the sort of expenditure surveys that either EPA or the Department of Commerce and others use to figure out what people spend money on, but I don't have a good sense of the sort of use of those especially in terms of household products. Just because someone buys something doesn't necessarily mean they use it, and I don't know, given that these expenditure surveys tend to focus on sort of the dollars versus the quantities, I would be even a little bit uncomfortable making assumptions about if they buy, you know, this many dollars worth of something, are they, what equivalent physical units are they buying at a time? If we knew that, then we could say, well, you know, they're buying this two or three times a year. That gives us a sense of how much they're using it. So I don't have a great solution. I mean, it's a completely appropriate caveat, but, again, that's why it was driving me towards thinking of, you know, can we look for these order of magnitude differences? But in terms of parsing that out across different sensitive subpopulations, I don't have a good sense of how to do that.
Thank you.
Did anyone else would like to speak to this issue?
Debbie, this is Roger McFadden.
Hey, go for it, Roger.
Yeah, I'm not opposed at all to the idea of looking at volume. However, there's a couple of things to consider when you look at these volume approaches. One is there should always be a correlation or comparison or a ratio built between the toxicity of a chemical or the toxicity of a product and the high volume or low volume of that, because there are certainly things that are more toxic than other things, and those more toxic substances in smaller amounts can just have as much impact as the lesser toxic substances in very high volume. So there, if you look at quantity, you know, I might encourage a careful look at the toxicity profile or the environmental profile at the same time and create some type of a correlation between that. Also, when you look at building priorities around the highest volume items, another thing to consider, and let's take cleaning products as an example, that space has been pretty active for the past 10 years, and there's been a lot of really positive movement in the cleaning products industry. And I give that credit to NGOs. I give that credit to environmental groups. I give that credit to businesses who have taken leadership positions and developed, you know, safer alternatives, and to the point where they're really disclosing fully on their own, voluntarily, disclosing fully the ingredients in those products. So not opposed to looking at a product group of that sort, but maybe you'll want to make sure that you pick some areas where, you know, maybe they're laggards, because if the industry is already moving in a positive direction, you could argue that maybe that's where we start, because it's lowest hanging fruit and they seem to be very cooperative already, and maybe we can get you know, some the ball rolling. Then again, maybe your greatest impact might be in areas where there's been some laggard approach.
Thank you, Roger.
Yeah.
I want to focus our attention on question 2B, 2C. So, should a ranking formula be used? How do we weight different factors? And A, do we need thresholds? So I want to focus us, if I can now, moving forward, on those questions, if we can. So who would like to speak? Okay, Kelly's in the queue. Anyone else?
I'll be in the queue. Also.
Mike Wilson, anyone else?
Dele.
Okay, Dele. All right, let's start with those three, and then we'll move from there. Kelly, you're first.
I would recommend against using numeric ranking criteria or thresholds. And the reason for that is that I've done a lot of work on pollutant source identification. I'm not sure how many other folks on this call have started with a pollutant and then looked to see what the exposure, you know, what are the sources of that pollutant. I've done a ton of that kind of work, mostly in water. And it, you take the weight of the available evidence, and you can actually do a lot with information that's out there. I've been really surprised how far I could get. You know, sometimes you can just get to big and small. But I don't think that that's an exercise that should be specified in regulations, because the methodologies vary by media. The exposure to humans, you're trying to do numeric estimates probably of modeling exposures in water. You're looking at products and how they wear off and how they wash off and all that kind of stuff. So I just don't see how you could possibly come up with something that would be meaningful here. So no numeric rankings. I don't recommend thresholds. Instead, I think it's very important the department grab to the narrative standards opportunity. And so my idea is a different process, and I can present that when we're at the point. I already want to wait and get a reaction on those.
Let's hold that.
Yeah.
That's a very specific recommendation, and you're going to give the alternative in a minute. Let's just keep. Let's go around. Thank you, Kelly. Mike Wilson.
I guess I share Kelly's concern about applying numeric values in terms for driving decision making, in part because it we end up losing a lot of really important information, and so I guess it's a I also think that we have to start somewhere. And And I guess I will maybe I'll follow the example and not reiterate and sort of have some thoughts about your comments, Debbie, and some of the others that might be helpful. But I guess if we're going to focus on this question of numeric ranking for now, yeah, I would tend to advise against that.
Okay, so here I, as the prerogative of the chair, I'm looking at my watch. We will go till 20 of 12 responding to this question, and then we will come back and with some, it sounds like there are some proposals that we'll come back to. So, Dele, you're next.
Yeah, I mean, I'll wait to hear the proposal, but I don't think we can do without any kind of ranking at all. So I think what we need, what I would rather have us talk about is what indices to use. And I still think economic cost is very important, and it's one way to, because we have to start somewhere, according to Mike, for sure. We may have a set of 50 priority chemicals. Somehow we can't do them all. And we have so many different factors to weigh that any weight we address will be attacked by somebody else except for dollars. So if we have a way to convert whatever rank, whatever impacts we have to cost, I think that's almost always one way to go. So that would be my recommendation.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Deli, that no matter what ranking system or prioritization scheme we choose, it will raise the ire of those who fall within that spectrum. So cost, I hear you. Anyone,
yeah.
Would someone else like to respond to recommendations on A and C on this?
Yeah, this is Jay.
Okay, one second. Jay, anyone else?
This is Mike.
Mike Kirshner, okay. Anyone else? Okay, Jay, go for it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to, hearing Kelly's recommendation, but I think, I fully agree everybody else that it's not easy and simple way of ranking, But since I don't have a particular suggestion, so this is my wish here is that to be whatever the ranking the method or the system should be simple, clear, and flexible.
So, okay, thank you for that, Jay. I want to just remind people that some of the attachments showed some sample ranking systems. So the sort of high, medium, low bins versus numeric scores and multipliers and such. So just want to remind you that we saw some potential systems. So the question here is really, are you comfortable with putting a system on this complex universe? And if so, what kind of a system? So, Mike Kirshner?
I get a bit nervous about numerically ranking things and thresholds for these things when the experts can't even agree among themselves on this thing. We don't have standards in place for that are, I think, give us detailed enough data on specific chemicals so that you can rank one above another or one below another. So I think there's got to be a lot of expert judgment. I do agree with Daly that we do need some way to do this because if we don't, how are we going to prioritize? So, yeah, I really, from that perspective, look forward to hearing what Kelly says. I guess I'll bring it up again. AAHP is it's an interesting tool. I've never actually put it to use, but I can see that in a complex for this degree of complexity, it might be worth considering as a methodology for
so I just would like to push back to the group a little bit, and maybe Kelly, maybe Mike Wilson are going to do this, but if we don't put rankings in the regs or some sort of parameters, what we're really saying is that it's the expert judgment of the department to set those priorities. And there's a certain level of public trust then that comes with that, because you then have to say that we believe that the staff under the direction of a political appointee are going to come up with good decisions. And so there is a little bit of trade-off that I just want to put out there to not having some particular guidance for what factors. So just putting, okay, and Kelly's shaking her head at me, which is good, but I just want to put that out as my fear. And anyone else would like to comment before we hear from Kelly and Mike with their alternatives that they want to put on the table?
I guess this is Mike Wilson, and I hear that concern, and I think it's a real one. And problem with, there's certainly problems with a numeric system, and yet we also have to come up, we have to make decisions somehow. And one of the things that a numeric approach tries to do is give us some basis that is quantitative that would then essentially shield the decision maker from the essentially the pressure that comes when a decision is finally made. And so I guess it's, for me, the you know, I guess I haven't come to a sort of candid on what would be the most effective approach here, but I hear Debbie's concern. I think it's real, and I don't want to jettison the idea of a numeric rating system of some kind.
So, Julie, Roger, Jay, anyone, Scott, want to weigh, I know Scott you already did, but anyone want to weigh in before we go to Kelly? Okay. And, I mean, Odette, I would just love also to hear from you. Is DTSC thinking that this would be, to Mike's point about, Mike Wilson's point about giving you political cover, so to speak, or justification and explanation for decisions? Because it's clear that whoever does fall within the first group is, you know, going to push back. So.
Okay. Well, I'm not just saying this to be politically correct, but we weren't really thinking about it in terms of giving us political cover.
And I mean that in a generous way. I don't mean that in a cover-your-butt way. I mean that in a, you know, clarification way,
right,
and an explanation way.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And one little piece of clarity, and then I'll respond more to the question, is just to be clear, when we talk about ranking, we're not thinking of coming up with a list that has everything listed, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, et cetera. It's just a way of finding that cutoff in terms of what products are we going to look at right now. So let me just say that first. You know,
well, I think that's helpful because that's a sort of a narrower version of what a ranking system would do.
Yeah. And, you know, we have, you know, last year when we were working on this, we avoided using this kind of a ranking system, in large part because of the difficulty of, you know, coming up with a system that that addressed a lot of the concerns that folks have been talking about today. How do you get the right system that has the right factors and apply the right weights, if you're going to apply weight, that works for all the variability of product? We're also looking at this in the chemicals arena too. But having said that, you know, we did get a lot of comments from various different parties that they felt some kind of a ranking system would be beneficial. From industry standpoint, I think one of the reasons they would like to see something fairly concrete is they want, a number of them want to be able to predict in advance the potential for their products to be listed and be subject to the alternatives assessment criteria. So I think that's about all I have to say at this point.
I think that's really helpful, Odette. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie, this is Roger.
Please, go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, I think that's so important, what was just said, giving the businesses who are affected a heads up so that they have an opportunity to prepare. I think that's really, really smart. I was just going to suggest something here, and I'm just going to pick some at random. I'm not suggesting that what I'm about to say is what DTS should absolutely do. But I want to take your exposure potential 1A, B, C, and D, and I want to pick one thing from each one and ask if that isn't the kind of logic thinking that you would want to use. For instance, let's take A. So products containing priority chemical ingredients, and I'm just going to pick one that show up in drinking water. That have direct contact to the body, that are likely to be used by children or women of childbearing age, that are personal care. Now, I'm not suggesting that those are all the right things to pick, But isn't that the thought process you're wanting to use here? You're wanting to first of all identify what are we going to kind of, what's going to trigger this? Is it a biomonitoring study? Is it a drinking water analysis? And it strikes me that direct body contact is important, and children and women of varying age are important. And then you just have to pick kind of what category you want, and if it's direct to the body, personal care might be kind of where it goes. So that's I'm wondering if you can't create some kind of a model around using that thought process.
You, Roger.
Thanks.
Other thoughts? Okay. So I'm going to let Kelly give us some of her thoughts, and we can see about responding to that.
So I'm under other ideas, and what I, going back and reading the statute, I see that the department needs to establish a process for identifying things, and we're wanting to provide some criteria for decision making. So I'm going to talk about two things, the process and the criteria, and I see those as distinct from each other. So that's a really, really important point for framework purposes. The other context I want to provide is that although I think most of this conversation, most people are thinking about human exposures and they've got some theoretical things they're thinking about, when I'm thinking about this process, I'm thinking about very practical examples that I'm aware of today that need to be addressed. PAHs and pavements, you know, copper and brake pads, the sewer septic system, additive chemicals. I can go on with those kinds of things. But this is not a theoretical exercise. So I just want to remind people of that. They seem to think they have to start with the universe and come up with some theoretical ranking approach, and we don't need to be theoretical about it. So first the process, and then I'll talk about the prioritization factors. I think that the department can't possibly, it doesn't have the resources to go through and know everything that's out there. So it really needs to rely on other experts and information that's provided to us. And that's why the petition process that was included in the previous draft regulations is really important. That's a way that the public, basically the department will go out and say, okay, public, we want to know which things we should be looking at. Give us the case. Here we'll talk about the prioritization criteria in a minute, but tell us how this product, this chemical in this product meets this chemical ingredient that's perhaps in a group of products, reaches the threshold of being something that should be a priority for us by telling us, give us that petition. The department should also be consulting with its fellow agencies in the state, Fish and Game, the Air Resources Board, OEHA, I think is a very important place to consult. All of those different agencies to get information about what they say are the priorities, the pollutant priorities, the products that are the sources of that. But the DTSC should not be limiting itself only to stuff that is provided to it. DTSC should also have the capacity to the extent it has resources to do so, evaluate pollutant sources, get information, bring forward its own self-initiated suggestions. So the first step in the process is to solicit for public input, consult with agencies, and the DTSC to look at its own information, and together get everything that's out there brought forward. Then DTSC as a regulatory agency should be drafting a list.
I'm sorry, but I want to interrupt you here because we're running out of time. And, you know, all the stuff you said, you know, is important stuff, and it is. But frankly, it's for a separate discussion we can have another day. What I really want to get out of this particular subcommittee is the criteria. And we can talk about how we solicit recommendations and data another day, but we've got about 15 minutes left. So if we could focus on the criteria, that would really be helpful to us.
Sure. So then the department puts out the draft list. It solicits public input as to how well that list meets the criteria, and then it finalizes the list. So I'm not going to touch on whether the list is only about the products or whether it includes a broader list of chemical concern. That's for another day. In terms of the criteria, I've been listening to everybody on the call and trying to bring that into groups. And I think what I'm pulling together here is that it's important that the criteria be narrative and not numeric, that they have an equal weighting, so it's not a sequential stepwise process, as Julie said. that it's a mix, that they're parallel considered. So that allows DTSC to do what the ARB does and get a mix of big problems and easy wins in its final list. And the first one is, I think that it should be, is this a hazardous substance? And, of course, the law says start with what OEHA says is a hazard trait. We then talked about how we might pull, that there might be other things that might be factors in coming up that it has short and long-term effects, that it's from international lists, that it's linked to harm or potential harm. So, and so that's one, is that it, you know, is the substance hazardous? Is it harmful according to all of those various things? The second is the product a source of pollutant exposure to humans or the environment? This is where the factors that come into this are volume, the significance of the exposure. So the concentration of the exposure point, someone mentioned, the ways that exposures occur would be considered in this pollutant exposure. Are sensitive subpopulations exposed disproportionately or importantly? What about trends in these exposures? The third is externalized costs. So we talked about cost to government, cost for healthcare. The fourth is the availability of viable, safer alternatives. And then I'll put on the table, I'm not sure if this should be a criteria or not, but often in these kinds of processes, there's a fifth criteria which has to do with stakeholder interest or public interest in that. And I don't know if that should be a criteria here or not, but that's commonly a narrative criterion in making these decisions. So that's what I propose, and I think it draws in all the stuff that we were talking about today and allows the department to make a mix of recommendations.
Okay, so you made the statement that there wouldn't be a weighting system, that it would be essentially expert judgment to come up with a mix of challenging but harmful and easy wins.
Yeah, and that the weighting, so the narrative criteria would be there, and the department would be weighing on those various criteria, but by taking public input, it would get additional information and additional advice. So the weighting system is partly that, and that quality assurance step is the public input. Do we have it wrong? Have we really missed up here? Are we missing key pieces of information? So it's a different, the process is really important of that. That's why I keep talking about the process.
Kelly, I appreciate that, but, you know, I really need us to focus on what's in this topic paper and the questions here, and we'll talk about how we get the data at another time, please.
Okay. All right. So Kelly has put her proposal on, which is a process-focused proposal and does not have weighting in there, high, median, low. We talk about some of the challenges for the department to not put that in writing in the regs and the trade-off between flexibility and direction. Would anyone like to comment on, comments on what Kelly said? Mike, you said you had some ideas. Have your ideas been put on the table?
No, I guess not yet. I'm sure I'd be happy to weigh in here. This is Mike Wilson, yeah. And it's sort of from what I'm hearing from Kelly and then also Debbie's point before the break and also what Julie said, it seems that, there's the problem of being able to act on what we know, sort of what's underneath the lamppost, and that's what I hear both, Kelly and Debbie saying, we need the DTLC to be able to take action on known problems. And as Kelly said, they're not theoretical problems, they're real problems, we know what they are. Some of them may be in other agency or BDOs may have that information and so forth, and we want this process to be able to give DTSC the tools to be able to take those kinds of actions on known problems today. And so we also need to have put in place the means for DTSC to discover those problems that we don't yet know exist, actually. And that might be, that's where I had, I had proposed a sort of five-step process. And so I would, based on what we're hearing here, I think I would amend that process to include two things. One is the ability to take more efficient and quicker action on the basis of known substances, and as Debbie said, particularly where there is the availability of safer alternatives, to that would be sort of a one track. And the second track would be more following this sort of five-step path that I laid out. And I would amend that, my second amendment here is that that five-step process, I think, as Julie said, it doesn't make sense to do that in a linear way. That's an iterative process, and we don't want to sort of box ourselves in the regulation in a linear way that's going to exclude lots of products that we might be concerned about. And so, getting to this question of criteria, that leads us to this sort of opening problem, which is, does it contain a hazardous substance? The criteria, I think, to meet that question would be for the first sort of track, answering those that that we know are a problem today that have been identified by California EPA and require some and warrant some action. And then the second would be those substances that have been identified around the world as chemicals of concern for which there really is no further dispute. That being sort of the initial criteria to sort of launch us down two tracks.
Thank you. So is there anyone on this call who feels or wants to talk about a little bit the advantages? I mean, I think Kelly brought up a good point about it's hard to think about one set of criteria or ranking system that would work for so many different products and so many exposure paths. I get that complexity. And I can't remember who said it. Maybe, I don't know if it was Jay, did you say that it just needs to be simple and understandable? So how do we, is there a way to achieve that? Is there a way to have a ranking system that is understandable, transparent, and fairly simple, doesn't fall under its own weight, and yet is able to deal with the complexity of product categories?
This is Jay. Getting back to what Roger commented, and then plus what I think, listening to you as well as all that we have to come up some kind of a matrix that everybody can follow. You know, the process is important also, but for example, we have a matrix table, let's say, and then left side we have product and chemical ingredients showing up in, let's say, drinking water. And then, that chemical is identified as, let's say, some kind of, chlorine, the brominated, polybrominated by phenyl ether. And then, that was already banned and listed in a banned chemical, so that should be in the order of ranking 1 to 5, let's say. One is immediately pay attention to take it out, so one. And then next one going, this chemical was the chemical from the product found from biomonitoring. Then there is a list of chemical biomonitoring. Then that should be one. If there is chemical is identified, then either four, five, or to be determined. And then I think in terms of it's health hazard to children, and that can be, one. So we can have a the left hand side a the identifier or names of identifier, and then right side we can have number 1 through 5. So that's something I can make some suggestion here.
So a matrix that would show perhaps in each box would be yes, no, or high, medium, low. Is that how you would
high, see? Medium, low, or you know, numeric, and then you make a notation underneath table. 1 means what? 2 means what? You know, so that you know, if a manufacturer look at that table and says, oh, yeah, my product has you know, the number 1 you know, issue, number 2 issue, or I don't have any problem 4 or 5. The fourth and the fifth, you know, the chemicals, so that they know, okay, if there is one, I need to get it out or act on immediately.
Yeah.
If it's 5, you know, then maybe, you know, we don't have to worry about. So I think it's the way that I was thinking about, you know, it got to be simple, but at the same time showing some actionable you know, recommendations or guidelines.
So, Jay, I could imagine that industry would really appreciate a matrix like that. It would be pretty clear for them. What I would like to ask you to do is to, and actually now this is, it's 10 of, and I want to give this instruction to everyone, not just to pick on Jay. So Odette is going to have to take what she heard in our last two calls, as well as with the other two groups, and summarize it and come up. I mean, our goal is on May 5th and 6th, is to present almost the consequences of our recommendations. So if DTSC took the advice of the Green Ribbon Science panel and wanted to have no ranking system, this is what the regs might look like. Or if DTSC was going to create a matrix, this is what the regs might look like. So that's what she's charged with, and that's a pretty hard task. So what I would like to ask each of us to do is to think about Odette's charge and to try and help her by putting in writing what you would like the recommendation, the regs to reflect. And so, Jay, I would just say for you as an example, you talk about a matrix where you've got columns and rows. What would those columns and rows be? And you don't have to answer this now. But just thinking about it, if we're trying to limit the universe of products that contain chemicals of concern, what would that matrix look like? And, Kelly, you know, you are interested in more narrative approach and the criteria. What would those specific criteria be? I mean, the comment was made, for example, that the list in 2A, question 2A, 1A, the products containing product chemicals that, is too short. It's missing some important things. What is it missing? You know, what are some other attributes, and what should be listed in the regs versus what should not, to get at that challenge of the list in, you know, includes but is not limited to, and how can we, but not worrying about writing it for her, but just making sure that that list is complete. And, you know, Mike put out a 5-step scenario that he then said he had a couple amendments to. So maybe he can diagram out, I could picture that in a flow chart somehow, of what that process might look like. So I would just like, and then some people we haven't really heard a lot from. So Julie, you have been referenced several times, though you haven't come back on to talk. What is it that are those key things that, you know, people are taking away from you, your comments, but what would you like to make sure DTSC understands in what you've said? So that is my challenge to this group. Odette, do you want to focus that challenge a little more?
Probably only in terms of timing, because we don't have a lot of time to do this. Once we get your everybody's suggestions, those will need to be posted to the web, but we will then take those and do this essentially this report out, which will need to be also posted sometime before May 5th and 6th. And that's not very far away, so I would like your individual recommendations by the end of the week, if at all possible, and you can email them to Kathy. She'll collect them all.
Yeah. Well, it's fresh in your mind. I think it would be great to just put down, and, you know, Odette doesn't want to read a five-page document, so, you know, it can be bullets, it can be flow charts, it can be whatever is helpful for you to communicate. Odette, anything else on that?
I don't think so, except I really appreciate all of your time and thought, and I can tell you all have given time to think about this outside of the phone call, so I really appreciate that. I think that the homework you've done in between has really been very beneficial.
Anyone on the call have some final thoughts that they would like to share with the group?
Debbie, this is Roger. I'd just like to say thanks to Odette and to the entire staff at DTSC. It's a tough job you've got. Thank you for all your hard work in doing this. So just as you've thanked us, we need to thank you as well.
Thank you, Roger.
Yeah. Can I ask a clarifying question before we close?
Yeah,
this is Mike Wilson. So on the May 5th and 6th, is there going to be anything that continues to happen with the subgroup? Or are we just going to be convening as a large panel?
Just as a large panel. We only have a day and a half. And at the end of the meeting on Friday, we will have a short time to talk about next steps. And I think during that time we'll talk about do we need to continue these subgroups talking about these topics, or do we need to set up additional subgroups, different subgroups to talk about different subjects, because clearly, you know, these are very tough subjects, but we've got other subjects. We've really just dealt with the first part of the process.
We're not going to try to sort of come up with some sort of summary of the group's discussion, of the subgroup's discussion.
Yes, but we're going to, in addition to what Debbie talked about in terms of our showing the different options that would be the result of the recommendations we've heard from different people, we're going to have some kind of a report out that highlights the what we think we've heard from all of you. We're going to send that, after we send it to Debbie, we're going to send it to all of you as a draft so that you can each look at it and make sure that your thoughts are captured in it and captured accurately. Not every little word, but, you know, the basic high-level thought.
And that's going to form the basis for a discussion of the entire graph
right.
at the meeting.
Yeah.
Kathy, you said that will form the basis for the discussion of the full panel.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the thinking was is that, you know, while members of the graph may have been listening in, for example, to our subgroup, they might have strong opinions and haven't had a chance to weigh in. And so the members of the graph, including us, will be responding to the summaries of all the subgroups, and then to bring the conversation to make it as concrete as possible, because at this point that's obviously our intent, we will also be responding as a whole to what the consequences are. You know, so the regulatory, you know, end product might look like this if we took these recommendations. So just to give people really, as a whole, the chance to weigh in to all the different subject matters. That was the thinking for the organization of the whole panel. Any other comments, closing thoughts?
This is Kelly, and I want to echo Roger's thanks to DTSC and also thank Debbie for the work, the time that she and the co-chairs have put in as volunteers, and the staff have been working really hard. I know it's a very awkward time right now, and so I very much appreciate that you all are struggling through this. And then a small request, it may end up being easier to chart some of this out as flow charts or some other way of doing that, and it would be helpful for our discussion if it's possible to think about that. I think one thing that's going to be very hard for Odette and the DTSC team is that we're all struggling with the interaction between the chemical prioritization and the product prioritization, and because we're in two separate groups, the first time we're going to talk about that together is as a panel. So that's something I really appreciate. You know, if you could help think about, you know, their graphic or other means where we can simplify stuff a little bit, because I think we're kind of down a level in many ways below where we really need to be having the discussion, because we need to step back and be thinking about how do those pieces fit together before we start writing criteria for priorities and products, because I'm not sure it's really distinct from criteria for prioritizing chemicals.
Good points, Kelly. Thank you.
Yeah, and I do think, Odette, that will be really, I don't know how to present that, and maybe the co-chairs and you and Kathy can be talking about ways of presenting that intersection, because Kelly's right. The first time we will be, I mean, everyone from both groups keeps going back and forth because it's clear that they are linked.
Yeah.
And yet we needed a way to, I mean, in fact, the first, you know, iteration, Odette, to Odette's credit, she had the panels organized in different ways, the subgroups organized in different ways. So, because I think you recognize that, Odette.
Yes, it's a difficult challenge.
Yeah.
We can talk about that with the other chairs in terms of how to try to do a flow. It may be challenging to do a flow chart that really accurately captures the interaction between the two subjects, especially since we're trying to show the different alternative approaches for each part. So, but we can have some more conversation about that.
Right. So in closing, I would just like to thank everybody on the panel for, as Odette said, doing your homework, being thoughtful, being as concrete as we can, knowing that we aren't reg writers and that we all come with our own expertise. I would just like to end with an acknowledgement that I think one of the aha moments perhaps all of us on the Green Ribbon Science panel have, and perhaps people listening on this call have, is how challenging this is, and an appreciation for the challenge that DTSC staff have in front of them, because at the end of the day, they've got to put this in writing and has to make a system that works with no additional resources and knowing the climate, economic, and otherwise that we are in. So if nothing else, Odette and people around your table, I think you have a lot more sympathy and empathy from those of us.
Well, we appreciate that.
And with that, I will say goodbye to everyone.
Thank you.